Okay, thanks, Alison. It's really good to meet you again, and I really enjoyed your reflections on the nursing department at Edinburgh this morning. But other than your work with Jan, can you just tell me something more about your career and bring us up to the present day from when it's all started?
Well, you probably heard quite a lot this morning in what I said about my career being based, starting and continuing for a long time in the University of Edinburgh. And I think it was interesting, really, that I probably wouldn't have stayed in the same place for as long as I did, except there were not that many places to go that had got any kind of established beginnings of nursing research.
Yes.
And although I had a series of conventional university appointments, lecturer and so on, I think I would say that my career has been largely a research career. And my 10-year period as director of the nursing research unit, and then getting a personal research chair in the University of Edinburgh. And that was an interesting landmark in my career. I mean, you know that university.
I was there at the time.
Yeah, and a personal research chair is not that easy. And I think it was really important for nursing that the university acknowledged the need for a chair to complement the chair of nursing studies. So, and then I had a period as head of department of nursing studies, which, although that was very interesting, was also difficult to continue to combine a full research portfolio with that kind of managerial role. I think that's an interesting dilemma for nurse academics.
Yeah, because there's more to being a head than just running an academic department.
Yeah.
And a lot of external
exactly.
liaison.
And a lot of internal, if you want to be influential within the university.
Yes.
You need to be active within the university. You also need to have this outward-facing profile. So that was a busy period, and also coincided with an RAE, on which I was a panel member. And I suppose it was at that point that I was looking for a change and feeling I needed to have a different context, some new challenges. I mean, I am somebody who has always been driven by challenges. You know, I'm somebody who sees opportunities, who likes to think that there are openings to try and move things forward. And I had been asked several times to go to Adelaide. It was a particular remit that they had there. And so that was the point at which I thought, right, the children are finished university. Ian was semi-retired. It seemed a time to, you know, make a different kind of career choice. So I went to the University of Adelaide, to the School of Nursing there. My interest in that had been, I'd been there as a visiting professor. I liked the structure there, where the nursing school was co-funded by the nursing service, and the school and the service really working in a collaborative way with academic staff, having formal contributions to the service. You can choose what that could be. For me, it was obviously not a clinical one. So I worked in the nurse director's office doing policy work. But that was a contractual requirement. And on the other side, we had experienced members of the clinical staff of the Royal Adelaide Hospital who came in and taught in the department. And I really liked that structure. But what I was asked to do were two things in that school. It didn't have an undergraduate programme, and therefore was financially vulnerable. And it also didn't have a robust research stream. And so my appointment was really with a remit to move both of those forward. And it was a great opportunity to introduce a brand new undergraduate nursing programme in a well-endowed university with this benefit of a service collaboration. And that was quite an exciting thing, to build a new undergraduate programme, I suppose, with lots of elements from Edinburgh. And so that was done in my time in Adelaide, and we also did get a kind of programme of research moving forward, some external funding and so on. And I still have that appointment with Adelaide. Still got finishing off PhD supervision, help with things like grant applications, publications, things not with my name on, but in the kind of way that's useful. When I came back from that period of full-time engagement, I had a five-year period as a non-executive director on the board of NHS Lothian, and found that a very interesting opportunity to see the broader workings of decision-making in the NHS, and also in an era when evidence-based healthcare was really influencing management thinking and service development in the NHS. And the point at which I picked up JAD was actually in 2002 when I left Edinburgh University to go to Adelaide. And I was absolutely delighted to have that opportunity because I had been so interested in the kind of introduction of JAN in 1976, the year I got my PhD. I mean, I was so acutely aware we didn't have channels for research dissemination and discussion, and the way that James Smith introduced that journal with his aspirations absolutely resonated with me. I can remember thinking, oh, that's amazing. And so JAN had been an important journal for me, and over time I had got interested in not just publishing myself, but the whole business of reporting research, dissemination and so on. And so I had a 10-year period which kind of doubled up with Adelaide and my work back in Edinburgh, and really kind of brought me more or less to the end of my working career.
Yeah. Well, that was a typically modest run through your career, which has been pretty influential with nursing models and all that you did at the Nursing Research Unit in Edinburgh, and setting up programmes of research, but thanks. So I'm guessing in 1976 you never envisaged you'd be editor-in-chief of the Journal of Advanced Nursing.
I didn't have aspirations. I'll tell you what's interesting. For a girl of my age in the 60s, nobody encouraged you to think about a career, even school, and even if you were clever.
Yeah.
The discussion was about a job,
yes,
for girls it was nursing, secretarial, for the clever ones teaching.
Yeah.
And you didn't think ahead beyond getting a job, getting married.
Right.
You know, girls didn't go to university.
So what was happening with the sexual revolution in the 60s there? It obviously didn't impinge on that, or maybe it didn't make it to Scotland.
Well, I think things did change very much absolutely in my lifetime. And the 60s were an interesting period of, I suppose, not that far post-war if you think about it, but a real sense of things changing.
Yeah.
And that's why I think for nursing there was that opportunity in that time.
So when you took over JAN, it was already pretty successful. I mean, it was already recognised internationally, for sure. But what did you want to do to it when you took over JAN? What did you think was going to be the contribution you'd make?
I did have some clear thoughts about it when I started. And they were really, I suppose, reflected in the strapline that I introduced right at the beginning of my period there, which was about quality, relevance and impact. And I think that actually was a very useful triad of ideas to give a bit of guidance. The journal definitely needed to be brought a bit more up to date in terms of quality of reporting. I mean, there's a distinction, you know, the distinction between quality of research and quality of reporting. But by that time, I suppose I was well enough read to realise that quite a lot of what we were publishing in the name of research in nursing journals, including JAN, was not complete in its reporting. There were often omissions about sampling and details that weren't there. And Christine Webb was sub-editor at that time, and which was a great advantage because Christine had a real interest in the detail of the content. And so that was an agenda that she picked up with me, and we did do quite a lot of looking back, identifying where the kind of weaknesses were in the reporting, and building those into much more detailed guidelines for Jan, which were greeted with some ambivalence. I think for people who understood what we were doing, that was straightforward. For less experienced authors, they found it over-controlling, over-prescriptive, so it was an interesting kind of tussle there in a way. So that was one thing about quality. The other thing was about relevance. You know, I think already by that time I had a general feeling, not just about Jan, but in general, about what Gary was talking about today. Lots of bricks.
Yes.
But what were we building, you know, to use his analogy? And so that was when I looked around. The BMJ was a journal, British Medical Journal, which I liked in terms of its, the way it communicated to practitioners. And the BMJ is for doctors, and doctors read the BMJ, and that always intrigued me. And so they had started doing things like requiring papers to make statements about what this paper adds, you know, what was already known about this topic, what does this paper add? And I introduced with them Richard Smith's agreement that requirement into JAN papers. How successful it was, I don't know, but I think
it made people think. Other journals like IJS have followed suit.
Yes, and actually it's now regarded as good practice in journal publishing. So, and that was really about relevance. It was about trying to get authors to think about, you know, what is this contributing to, I suppose, nursing knowledge. So that was the other area. And impact, I, of course, was beginning to understand because of the research assessment exercise, the importance of publications in terms of their impact. And, you know, impact factors were not quite such a big deal then, but they were there. Jan was jogging along in the top 10. I understood as time went on the real importance of that to the publisher, if not necessarily to the journal. And I was, I mean, you probably know that I was more content with the fact that Jan was so well read and downloaded and cited that I was less worried about impact factor. Didn't want to kind of be manipulative about trying to improve it, but was interested in the concept of impact. And, you know, I began to understand what that was about. And it's interesting that the REF now has become really concerned with impact. And that's interesting. So those were really my kind of things that I wanted to do with Jan, plus the job I had, the practical job of Jan was poised to go online. So when I took over, everything was on paper in filing cabinets. And first of all, we went onto an online manuscript submission process and editing process online with the authors. And then later than that, got the journal online. And I think once we started getting all of the back copies online, that became quite exciting to me. The accessibility of JAN. Decisions like open access, you know, those were things that were introduced.
Yeah, you were certainly there during a period of huge change in the publishing industry. And I think probably there's never been such a big change as then, and a lot of these things are carrying on, but they're just tweaking now. You know, a little bit more of this, a little bit more of that. But that, I mean, that's very much how I saw your editor-in-chief period. It's interesting to note that I was speaking to Jim Smith earlier, he said he left me with the challenge of trying to demonstrate the impact of the journal on clinical practice, and I'm really thinking about that, and that's one of the things that you were concerned about. I'm not sure we do that very well. Because I was looking across the fence from JCN all the time at what was going on in JAN, and we just copied what you did. And it made us very successful too, but I think it was right. I think JAN was pretty much at the top of the tree. But I think it could have been quite vulnerable, as could JCN, if it hadn't gone down the road and adopted the changes that you put in. Because it's the standard now. Nobody argues about these things now. Nobody argues about Consort and Prisma. And
but I've always been good at looking outside of nursing, sideways, to see what's going on in the wider world. And it was easy for me when I began to read what was happening in the world of journals, nothing to do with nursing, that things were happening. And so I knew it was very important to be picking up on these things. And there were lots of interesting publications in that time, like the ethics of journal publishing and all of those things. So there were yeah, there was lots of things to be addressed, but it was interesting to do it.
Yeah. What do you think? I mean, you're ticking off my questions in a sense. I mean, Web 2 and the social media coming up, that was just coming in as you were stepping down. But what was the biggest challenge, do you think, during your time there? Not necessarily of those things that you mentioned, but maybe it was one of those.
I think the biggest challenge for Jan when I was there, I think probably was converting authors to some of these newer requirements. And I think I was surprised that there was quite a lot of resistance to some of it. So when, for example, I introduced the requirement for the author contribution to be explicated, I had to deal quite often with refusals to do that. It had never occurred to me that it would be problematical for people. But it was clearly challenging for some people who didn't understand where it had come from. And I suppose those were the challenging things for me in trying to take the authorship with you, because of course you can't have a journal if you don't have authors. During my period, I had a number of significant researchers in the UK who refused to send anything else to Jan because they didn't like some of these editorial policies. You know, I'm not going to name them.
Oh, I'd love you to. But
I'm sure you would love me to. But that was difficult for me because it made me worried that I was perhaps not presenting it clearly enough if people weren't understanding it. It was a little bit like the RAE. I never could understand why people couldn't get their heads around it. Because once I'd got my head around it, I did understand it. So I suppose those were the challenges for me. The kind of online stuff wasn't really challenging. That made it all much easier.
Well, I identify with that. You can be very easily not upset, and so your equilibrium can be upset when you think, you know, people don't like the journal and won't submit them, because, as you say, without them, you're nothing, you know. And people can be very critical of minor things. I met somebody in Saudi last week who was rather upset at the authenticate policy we have now, which is looking for similarity, and how that was handled. And I don't somehow think she realised this was just standard practice now everywhere, but I think that's the problem. I think
when you're
pioneering, you're the one that's doing it, and you think you're going to get knocked off.
I suppose the other thing that I was found difficult and probably didn't really crack was how to engage North American nurse researchers with Jan. You know, I went through a phase of going and attending conferences in the States, and I had a lot of connections, you know, in the US from kind of phase in the nursing research unit. And I was disappointed in a way that they didn't see Jan as a significant, you know, place for them to publish. And found that hard to try to find ways of explaining and presenting it to them that would engage them. In part, I think that's their problem of being, of seeing the American published journals as being more important and not understanding that worldwide Jan has a presence. So I think they were much more interested in publishing in impactful journals and in status journals and less interested in what I see publishing is about dissemination.
Well, I still meet people in the States who haven't heard of the journal, which I find extraordinary, and you think they might know better. But you've done something right there, because shortly after I took over America, submissions from America were the highest number of submissions to the journal. So it is improving. But you'd expect, given the number of publications coming out of the States, that it would be huge. But it's just just tips the UK.
Well, appointing Jacqueline Fosser as the North American editor, that was a really good ploy. And Blackhole were supportive of that. And that was because I felt we needed to have somebody who had access to, you know, the fellows and the groups in the US who we wanted to try to engage. So I think that was part of the reason for that. You know, less to do with me and much more to do with with Jackie.
Oh yeah, a very high profile person in the States. Right. Do you still read Jan?
I do. I do, interestingly. I don't read lots of other stuff.
No.
I now read any nursing literature, a bit like you were talking about yesterday, highly selectively. So I look for something, you know, to answer questions or, you know, inform me about particular aspects of things. And I began to do that when I was on the board of NHS Lothian. You know, I began to be using the literature in a kind of topic-driven way rather than, you know, as a kind of researcher feeling I was up-to-date with the literature. So it was much more a kind of search engine-driven type of interest in the literature. But JAN's about the only journal. When I was editor-in-chief like you, I read everything that was published. Every word that was published, I had read. Yes. I loved that, because I got to really know what was being published, and it also taught me a lot about reading articles. You know, and I realised I had spent a lot of time skimming articles. So I suppose just because I got into that habit, I reach out a bit in the same way, and I sometimes worry that I'm actually tempted to edit it.
Surely not. There is somebody editing it.
I enjoy it. And,
everything can be improved. You can edit anything.
Well, it always can, but I think it's good, you know, and you have a really, you know, you do have a clear hand in that. I can see that, you know, coming through. It's good quality, it's consistent, you know. I'm quite sure you do a lot of, you know, you're speedy at doing that. But no, I do read it, and I think I find it interesting to try to just, it's a way of me seeing what is going on, you know, what are the kind of fashions, because there's some, you know, you can see things, you know, kind of changing, who's publishing, where it's coming from. You know, I really like coming across papers that I do think really are saying important things, and I think, you know, that's good. I still worry that a lot of it is pretty immaterial.
Well, so do I, and I think every journal from Nature, I shouldn't say down to JAN, but down to the kind of journal that we are, worries about that, because the vast majority of papers published in every journal are never cited, which suggests that possibly that they're never read, and they certainly aren't useful enough to be passed on. I think we do depend on just the one or two papers, not just for impact, but you know, we're using the rest of them as a vehicle to get one or two really good papers out, but so it would be really good to get more important, influential.
That's what I feel.
Out,
you know, and I think in a way, I suppose what I would say is, I ask this question, should JAN be a much smaller journal?
Yes.
And
that's an interesting point.
Be highly selective.
Yes.
And
say
JAN is only publishing excellent work.
Yes, Well, that's, in terms purely of impact factor, that's worked for some other journals, and I probably. Somebody will do the math and prove me wrong here, but I think if we counted the number of papers published in The Lancet in a month, and that comes out weekly, it would be fewer than the papers that published in a month in JAN. So that's worth thinking about. The publishers have certainly agreed not to get bigger, because that could be very dangerous. I don't know whether they'd agree to getting smaller or not, but
I think they wouldn't want to. I had that discussion, you know, when I felt we were publishing lots of stuff that I wasn't convinced was either really high enough quality or of real, real value. On the other hand, you have to have, the opportunity for early career researchers to be publishing.
Yes.
I mean, it's a dilemma about.
And I think we can. I mean, I can sleep. I certainly think we can both sleep easily in the bed at night. The papers didn't get in if they did reach a certain standard. I mean, that was whatever that standard was, there is a standard that they have to meet. Yeah. Well, I've never discussed with Wiley about making the journal smaller, but I think it probably needs to change. I think it might be time for JAN to look different and feel different. This will be news to the publishers that are listening to the podcast, listening to this.
I mean, one way of
but
making
how would you see
well,
it?
Well, one way of making it smaller is I'm increasingly interested in how you can exploit digital platforms, you know, multimedia kinds of platforms. And I like the concept of layered content. Which even during my time in JAN was beginning to feature. I mean, I kind of experimented away in some of the journals. And I suppose that's what I would like to see, because I feel it might be a way of filtering out the important messages so that what you get at the front is a much shorter version, but allowing people to tap in to the depth, and you can take that broadly, you know, by having links. And I suppose what I'm saying is, you know, could Jan be novel in adopting actually an unconventional modernised format of how it publishes nursing research? So actually some of it might be linking to a podcast, to illustrations, or to other content on the internet. So I suppose if I was doing it now, that's how I would be kind of thinking. I'm very interested in how the digital world is moving. I mean, I have two children who work in that area, so I have kind of an inside view of what's happening. But, I mean, as a parallel, Sarah, daughter, works, she's in the film industry, she did have a production company, she's a producer, a documentary producer by trade, but she's gone at the moment into distribution online using various platforms. And interestingly, featuring behind the scenes content. So the film, so this is a Netflix parallel for independent films. So not the big studios, which Netflix, but an independent stream. And it's the behind the scenes content that is utterly fascinating. Interviews with the directors, interviews with the producer, photographs, offcuts, edits. But if you have a knowledge of film, an interest in film, utterly fascinating, hugely informative. So you have the film, which you can just watch and take at face value, but you have all of this, you know, layers of. And I suppose I have thought, you know, occasionally, that is a model. That you know you could use, and the interviews particularly are very interesting. You know, listening to a director talking about decisions about the film, you can imagine a kind of lead researcher giving you a kind of discussion or decisions about that.
Yeah, it's interesting you should say that. I mean, we do have podcasts on the YouTube channel, and we've got control over putting them out, and it's over selective content.
Yeah.
It's not systematic. Yeah. It would be nice to think that every paper could have that.
Yeah. Or maybe not. Maybe not every paper needs
feature
it.
More. I think we could do it with more. But the one thing we do offer, we now ask authors to give us a press statement. Mm-hmm. It's a sort of summary that's brings out the highlights in the paper.
Which the university
which we can use. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So this goes out to publicity people if we think the paper's worth it. But we also offer authors the chance to make podcasts and YouTubes, and you could count them in one hand. This is the thing. It's somehow, it's not just having the idea, and it's not just the editors saying, slaving away and doing these things, which I think is important. It's somehow engaging the authors to feel that it's more important, because I don't think they do. And the one or two have made the podcasts, mostly YouTube videos, they've been absolutely brilliant. You know, some have had music, some have been kind of one-minute summaries, quite innovative. One was a very relaxed interview with somebody sitting out in the garden. I just thought it just captured the paper perfectly. But again, I have five or six of these out of the 300 papers we publish a year, and we've offered this facility for nearly 3 years, you know, so I really struggle with how to get across to authors that it was important to take responsibility.
I mean, that may be partly reflecting that in nursing we may not have people who are savvy enough.
Yeah, I was just wondering if it's the subject.
And I always feel nursing is hampered as a profession sometimes by not getting up to date with some of these societal movements.
Yes.
You know, we miss out.
Yeah.
We will catch up,
yes.
But you kind of feel, well, you know, you're wasting these years while other people, you know, when I watch in the kind of industry that my daughter's in, that's absolutely taken off, has an entirely new interest, is pulling people in, you know, who've kind of lost interest in film.
Yeah.
There's a recognition that cinemas are now much less important, people don't go to the cinema.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the film industry to survive, and you could argue that for nursing research to survive, it's got to kind of shake itself up and say, you know, what are these new things?
Yes, I mean, my 7-year-old grandson can take my mobile phone and have a YouTube up before I can stop him. You know, he knows that he floods my YouTube channel with his own silly little ditties, but he can do it on my phone. He knows how to. He knows my password. He knows how to use video capture, and up it goes. And
well, here's an idea for you.
Yeah.
if nurses are not interested, put them out for the public.
Yes.
You know, there must be some papers that are published that actually the message is in them.
Yes.
Particularly about cancer.
People could pick up and talk about the importance. And actually, that would be also a way of showing impact.
Yeah.
You know, it would show the impact.
So there
you are. Yeah. Yeah, there you go. You've solved the problem in one fell swoop, Alison. Do you want a job? Well, thanks very much. I mean, that's really great. That's a nice half hour. I'll edit some clips out of this and put it together with yours and Jim. I mean, I might put it all together, but Frank cut out my little bits here and there. And I'll certainly give you the link to let you listen to it. So thanks.
Oh, great.
Thanks a lot.